We've had an interesting time, a lot of incredible conversations and discussions have been going on for a long time. Gary Noel has been doing a lot of special broadcasts on his own. He's got all the documentaries that he's done. I mean, talk about help for the veteran nation's veterans. Gary Noel is in the forefront, if there's no doubt at all. He's also got his retreat program. You might want to look on that, look in it, and find out about it. Well, let's continue with our conversation and everything, and how do we heal? How do we thrive? I mean, you know, when we look at moral injury, it's a significant problem. We've been discussing it off and on here. And we got to heal from the soul outward. We got to heal deep inside. Well, let's talk about it today. We got Alana Hartog. She's a trained psychologist, has been working on this for a long time. Alana and I have worked together for a whole bunch of years. I've been out there, did a speaking tour around with her to various locations. We had a very good time.
So, hi.
Hey, Alana, welcome back to Warrior Connection.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, when we talk about moral injury, I mean, it's so deep and it's so hard to do. I mean, Ray, when you think about moral injury, going back to Vietnam, what does it bring to your mind?
Well, I suppose it brings back the guilt and the shame of a lot of things that we were forced to do and some of the things that I actually initiated probably, but I think it's a little bit different from my PTSD, but I think moral injury is a part that has to be healed at some point.
Yeah, I don't think unless we can heal that. I mean, the PTSD, I mean, that's the thing in normal combat trauma and combat events and everything that happens in combat, just the horror of war, the fog of war. And PTSD is one thing, but this moral injury is far worse and far deeper, and it contributes to PTSD, I think, beyond any comprehension. Alana, is that kind of what your opinion is, or how do you feel on this?
Yeah, I think a word that's also helpful here, or a feeling, is remorse. You know, guilt can have this heavy, heavy, like, I'm bad thing, but remorse is very soulful. It's like a true sorrow for having been any agent of harm. And we can only really feel remorse when we are connecting with our soul, when we're connecting with that sacred place of all life being interconnected. And sin is such a heavy word, but sin really means off the mark. And the mark is the soul high consciousness level. And so from that level, it's so key, the forgiveness, because forgive because we know not what we do. I mean, isn't that what Jesus said when they were pounding the nails in his hands on the cross? Forgive them because they know not what they do. When we've acted in such a way, even when we thought it was right, and we find out otherwise, remorse is a way that we feel that sorrow.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, you've got the subconscious and the conscious mind. The conscious mind has to belong to the club. You have to be part of society. You have to be part of the culture. You have to be part of the good old boys, go out for a beer or whatever you're going to do, play basketball or watch a game. And that entails that you accept the status quo and what is in order to be part of it. But I know from the Vietnam vet era and now with Desert Storm and on, you can't be a part of it when your soul is severely damaged and severely injured, and you have to go back and ask yourself, not just what I did, but why did they have me do it? It was beyond my control. And what has happened to allow these events to take place and go to such a horrific consequences?
Doug, I think one of the things as far as a former veteran and combat and all that kind of stuff, you need to know all about that, and I'm sure the doctor does too, but I was raised in America, and in 1990, statistics say that 86% of Americans identified themselves as Christians, and I think what the doctor was just saying about Jesus was, if you know anything about Christianity, you know about the Ten Commandments and somewhat. And not only do we have that law over our heads many times, but we also have a conscience inside of us that identifies exactly with the same law. Don't lie, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't kill, don't be greedy, and then treat your parents with honor. And I think when you go into military and combat and a lot of bad things happen, whether it's civilian or military, you injure that end part of you that is there telling you what is right and wrong, and then you get injured by what you're participating in or what you've done or initiated. And I think it just makes me feel guilty or shameful because I have violated those certain moral high places in my life, and that I feel guilty from it.
I guess the Judeo-Christian ethics are pervasive in our culture and our society of all types. And when your brain is still trying to formulate and understand all this stuff at the time you go into the military and participate in combat, I mean, you know, Ray, you and I, when we went over there, heck, we had barely had our diapers changed. We were right out of high school, not knowing which is up and which is down. Now we're thrown into a situation where we have to make life and death decisions instantaneously, not realizing what the long-term consequences are.
This kind of pain, guilt or remorse, or is an awakening. It's a very difficult awakening, but our culture has got to wake up and go through it. So I'm so appreciative we're having this conversation. I look very deeply into root causes of war and Judeo-Christian ethics. And what I discovered of key, I think is real important, is that thou shalt not kill, and the teachings of the Master Jesus were essentially lost when the Roman Empire declared Christianity its main religion. It became the religion of the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire's land law is dominium. It legalized land and resources as a result of conquest, okay? That meant war. And the original Judeo-Christian ethic is that of koinonia. Koinonia recognizes that land and resources and the earth itself is a gift of the Creator for us all to fairly share for our self-sufficiency. That's the word atarkeia. So we lost it. Judeo-Christianity lost its fundamental economic land ethic and became the... under the Roman Empire, they developed the just war theory because the early Christians were pacifists. They believed thou shalt not kill. But the empire had to find a way to get these Christians to go into the wars. And right. So just war ethic was brought forth. And we even today hear that just war ethic put forth as a reason for war. So it goes so deep, and we have to really examine our hearts and souls and come to some new realizations of how to move forward to build a world that works for everyone and a world of everyone's basic needs met and a world of peace.
All right. Well, Doctor, I think war is necessary, even in Bible, in Israel's early days, they did have to go to war. But I think there is when God said, thou shalt not kill, God also made exclusion in the Old Testament for justifiable homicide. And when you think on that terms, we talk about going to war as a young patriot. You're going as a patriot, and you're going to stop the bad guys, what you perceive as the bad guys. The problem is they perceive you as the bad guys. And so we're over there killing each other. I don't feel bad about the enemy that I killed in combat because it was justifiable to me, and I was also stopping them from killing me and myself and my friends. And so it was not the killing that makes me feel bad. It's some of the ways I killed them, over-killing them maybe sometimes. I'm not talking about brutally cutting up those things. Yeah. But the brutality of combat creates it makes you feel dirty. It really does.
I really want to go with your experiences, and one more point along the lines, there is the Old Testament and the New Testament, which I was taught very clearly growing up in Bible school, very different, that the vengeful God of the Old and then the God of love of Jesus. Now, I know that there's a time when we must stand up and use force. I believe that force should be used under law. under law, including international law. Now, if a terrorist group based in San Francisco bombed New York City, we wouldn't bomb San Francisco. We would use law and the police and law enforcement to find the bad guys, put them on trial, arrest them, and give them their dues. So what I am saying is that the kinds of wars that we have, of nation against nation, of kind of tribe against tribe, that is what we need to abolish and outlaw. Not outlaw force, not that we're going to let everybody slug us and take everything away from us, but a different kind of force, and that would be force under law, under just law. Does that make any sense?
It does. I'm sure it does to Doug, too, you know, because we both realize that most wars, I think the military is more victim than anything else because we have been bought into situations of stopping communism. That's what we were doing in Vietnam, was trying to stop the spread of communism or such.
Yeah.
But it takes two people mad at each other or whatever, and then they send 2 million in there to kill each other, and we're not even mad at anybody.
Yeah. What do we do when two-year-olds or three-year-olds, you know, kids get in the bad part of themselves and start fighting? You know, what do? We don't let them bloody each other. We separate them and we work it out. So
I wish it could.
We
do
don't
that
have
way.
To look too far afield to see that killing the whole school is not going to solve any problem.
And I think that's where injury comes in, because when we've gone to war in Vietnam, and we realize, and I mean, have to call
the evil of war, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. So you might want to talk about that, Doug.
When we went to Vietnam, there's no two ways about it. I mean, won the battles, we lost the war. I mean, we had, when we look in there and look at everything and look back in retrospect and look at historical, I mean, really, truly historical, the individuals want to just be left alone to have their own culture and their own society. But we go back since antiquity, and other nations have gone into other take everything over. I mean, that's what's happened in the Middle East. That's what's happened in Europe. That's what's happened in Africa. So you wouldn't have an external force that comes in, and it's sort of like, well, we won the battle, and therefore we raised our flag over the area. Therefore, it's ours. Well, it's never been ours, and it never will be ours, because we don't live there. We don't have any rights to be there. And I think when it comes down to it, that's the root of the moral injury, because, I mean, the PTSD and involved in combat, and when you face the enemy one-on-one, that you can get by and you can heal. But this whole concept of, my God, they told me to do this. This was their justification. And they flim-flammed me. And so now you have the subconscious mind that has the Judeo-ethic moral Christian stuff there, understanding this, in total contrast to the conscious mind, was that, well, I got to belong to the group, so therefore I'm going to go along with it. And all these guys are in limbo land. A lot of you've been involved with the Army War College, you live right by it. What have you seen over the years? How has it all evolved, and how has it changed in conversations on just war and PTSD and moral injury?
Any path, as we become true individuals in tune with our soul, involves looking at the collective conditioning. You've mentioned that a few times, Doug, going along with everybody else. And where we were no longer oriented by what other people think of us, but when we find that compass of truth within ourselves, and one of the best ways to find that is to honor our own questions. We don't live in a society that loves and honors questions, you know, in school and so on and so on. But to know what each person's question is, if you ask the right question, you will find the answer. It will appear. So I'm encouraging everybody to know their questions and take yourselves very seriously when you have questions, and hold on to those questions till you get answers that resonate with truth to you. And then, two, if we're going to spend our precious time together and look at some pathways for healing PTSD and moral injury, and I'm trained as a transpersonal or psycho-spiritual therapist, and, you know, psychology hasn't really brought in the soul very much, but that was a path I was seeking and found. So the soul is the most the easiest way to connect is just, it's our pure center of consciousness. It's our pure being. It is, I am. Each of us is pure consciousness. So if you step out of the body sensations, the emotions, the thoughts, and just identify with, I am an awareness. I am a pure awareness. I'm a self-aware being. That would be like being in neutral, that you could always step to the neutral place. I am consciousness. And you can take a deep breath and you breathe yourself into just being present. And from that place, we can begin to safely explore the emotional healing for PTSD and moral injury, which I would suggest it comes from then paying attention and allowing the feelings, writing about the thoughts and feelings that are coming into the mind, expressing them in some way through some kind of arts or performing arts or colors, paintings, that kind of thing, scribblings, and begin to go through the process of healing by recognizing that the feelings of anxiety and growing anxiety, the feelings of anger where we're just flashing red, and the flashbacks are actually signs that the psyche, the brain, wants to heal from the trauma. That trauma that in order to survive got repressed and pushed down, and the feelings got repressed and pushed down. So we begin to honor the emotional intelligence within us that wants to also be acknowledged and to be felt. Does that make sense?
It does. Let me ask you a question, and I wanted to read this first of all. But it's some of the things that I've studied on moral injury, and I'm doing classes on them too. But some of the reasons that emerge from moral injury is betrayal by leadership, failures, peers, trusted civilians, your own moral standards, disproportionate violence, mistreatment of enemy combatants, acts of revenge on civilians and young and old and male and female, military sexual trauma, friendly fire, bragging. That's some of the things, but I think the list could go on. But do you agree that every person on the face of the earth, probably, is grown or is born with a natural conscience within themselves of right and wrong?
Deep down, yes, everyone. I also believe there's a certain percentage that they are so far removed for whatever reason. I don't know, trauma, collective trauma, intergenerational, that they would appear to be psycho or sociopathic. And a psychopath or a sociopath is not very well connected with any sense of conscience. And unfortunately, they can often be very charming, and they can be manipulative and get themselves into positions of leadership. So they're very cunning, and we have to be aware of the psychopath and the sociopath in leadership. They are divorced primarily from that center of the consciousness, which is present in most human beings, yes.
Well, you know, when they talk about a sociopath on television sometimes, they'll be on the news or something, and Jeffrey Dahmer, for instance, they say at one time in his life, the neighbors have said he was a good kid. He was this, he was that. But things began to twist him and turn him, and I do believe a callus is formed from a continual rubbing, like a splinter or something.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the point you don't feel the splinter anymore. So I think you can develop like a callus on your conscience.
Yes.
To you don't feel any longer.
Yeah, so, and I think tough guys that go to war have to have that to survive. And
you
then
do.
When you can let good guard down, you can start, like, reflecting and feeling again. That's when, oh, my goodness, there's an eruption of feelings. And so,
well, you develop that conscience, and I talk about it in a book I've written called The Never-Ending War, and it's the unseen scars of post-trauma. But I show in my book how I began to go into combat. Now, I had no idea what combat was until I got to it. But when you begin to lose friends and such, you become going to the revenge factor, and you do what everybody's teaching you. And suddenly you realize, looking back, you have developed a hardness that allows you to kill people and not feel compassion or compunction about it.
Right.
And so you're developing that mental hardness. if that makes any sense.
Oh, perfectly understandable. And
well,
either
also,
you continue
when you come
the rest
back
of
home,
your life. Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
have
I was
to
gonna say, either you
yourself.
Continue the rest of your life in that hardness, which does yeah. not allow for close, intimate relationships with family members, with community. And because of all those repressed feelings and layers of hostility, outbursts of homicide and suicide, unfortunately, is a potential. So guys like you who can say, hey, I went through this and now, man, I'm finding my healing path and I'm telling you how I did it. Ah.
Well, you know, it's
so
when I came back, I was
learn.
Developing other problems like substance abuse, drugs, alcohol,
yeah.
such. I got married.
Yeah.
But I've read statistics said that Vietnam veterans have a 94% divorce rate, which shows there's a lot of internal problems, external problems, and I developed all those things. But it's what you said earlier. When I found Jesus Christ, or maybe he found me, he changed everything. He wiped that conscience clean because through forgiveness, and I was able to move forward, beginning in a new life of compassion and mercy that I didn't have before. So it does make a difference.
How does the concept of Maslow come into this? I mean, when you're in the utter combat, you're down at the lowest level, food, water, and survival.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to have consciousness and everything, get to self-actualization through education and everything, I mean, you're bouncing all around in this thing. And it seemed like individuals have been to combat, and depending on what they are, they're all over that whole triangle at any given point. But they have knowledge and abilities and skills and attitudes to reach the pinnacle if only they get healed, don't they?
Oh, yes, and even more so. I have actually found in my counseling and therapy practice that those people who have been through some of the very, very darkest, bleakest, most painful experiences, as and when they heal, oh my, become a force of light and healing in the world. And you don't have to share my belief on this, but I think that it may well be true that when we're in spirit and we have not yet come into incarnation, we may actually make some decisions about the kind of life experiences we might have that will help our soul evolution. And it may be that certain souls, very strong souls, say, okay, I'm going to Earth, give me the worst. Let me see what's really going on there. See if I can find my way back to love after I've seen the very worst evil that Earth can give me. And so talk about a warrior's path to go through this enormous suffering, and then, rather than kill ourselves or kill somebody else, this is what we can feel like doing, to come through the healing and say, I will be a force for love, a force for peace, and the value, meaning, and purpose in healing is so beautiful. And I want everybody who's listening to know that is your human potential. That is your opportunity to build a life worth living and to share, like Ray, you are sharing, like Doug, you are sharing, your experiences of going through the worst of the worst and coming out the other side. Thank you, bro.
Now I'm going back in, and Doug is also, and trying to say, look, if we could do it, anybody could do it. Colonel Oliver North was one of our second lieutenants in Vietnam in this place called the Meat Grinder. And look at him, for instance. And he's had a very successful life. He's a Christian today. He's trying to live out. You know, we did a lot of bad things. Where we were living at in the most northern part of South Vietnam was places called the Meat Grinder. It was in the first 15 miles of that area. We spent about 85 to 90% of our time out in the jungles in the bush. That's where we lived. And so we were in contact with the enemy almost daily. And in doing those things, you become very creative in trying to stay alive. You're going through a lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of, and we see things happening. And some of the things that I've read about just resonates with me, because it talks about, it's talking about when you have, what develops, moral injury basically is when you're, perpetrating, you're a perpetrator of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Or you fail to prevent something, or you bear witness to something, or you learn about a violation, and there's really no threshold to it. But when you when you participate in those things, you come back not only with post-trauma, but you also come back with a moral guilt and shame over things you did because of necessary. One of the things we practiced up on the demilitarized zone up in that area was the fact is we did not take prisoners. The reason we didn't take prisoners, Doctor, was not because we were mean or angry. Well, it could have been, but we were 19 years old, 18, 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
The reason we did it was we figured if we killed him now, I'd never have to fight him again. And once you learn that law, all the other laws go out the window. And
yeah.
So we didn't take and you suffer because of that later in life.
Now, you said this, Ray. You said out there with the enemy. Now, in the time, in the moment, at that whole period of your life, that was the enemy. And you were sort of, it was them versus us. Us versus
yep, sure.
them the whole way, right? And now through
yep.
your healing, if we have souls, they have souls. We're all human yep. beings having an experience on this planet, right?
Yep.
And Christian, love your enemy. What does that mean? That means they're no longer your enemy. They're part of the human family and the human condition. So seeing my role here in our wonderful conversation is maybe give some tips for healing moral injury and PTSD. One is to write a letter to that quote-unquote enemy, to whoever you feel that you feel a moral injury, that you were the agent of moral injury. Sit down. Doesn't matter if they're dead or alive or you have any idea about who they were, where they are. Write the letter. Dear person. Here is what
I have done such as that
uh-huh.
since I've been going to VA for the last 15 years, really. I went 30-some years without going. But let me explain one thing to you. I was invited to go to church one night. I haven't been to, I've never done that, and it's like that was far from me. But I did go. And in that service that night, it was almost as though God ambushed me that night. And so I found myself asking God to forgive me of everything I'd ever done, and I truly believe he did. The next day, all this happened. The next day, I was at work, and I banged my head on a cabinet when I started to get up. And I remember I hollered, praise God, and I thought, boy, something happened to you, man. Something happened to you. I ended up that day praying for Vietnamese, first time in my life, because I had a bitter hatred even coming back home. I hated Oriental people. But God had changed my heart in one experience of asking him for forgiveness.
Well, I want to say hallelujah. What a beautiful story. And also, Ray, were you raised Christian?
I was, but my dad kept us in church. My mom kept us in church, but I never made a commitment to God. I never I never was that interested in it. And so only in Vietnam, there's stories in my book about being caught in ambushes and these type of things that I lived through. And my dad was praying for me the whole time, and I believe that's why. And my mom had died early, but my dad was praying for me. And there's stories in my book about how my dad was praying the same. I was ambushed between 5 and 5:30 in the afternoon in Vietnam, and they ambushed me 15 feet away, and I played dead for 20 minutes while they were fighting. And I came back home, and my dad died the same year I came home. And then 12 years after my dad died, after Vietnam, I found out through a brother that my dad prayed for me every morning between 5 and 5:30 in the morning in Newport, North Carolina.
He was praying then.
And that was exactly 12 hours difference between Vietnam and Newport. That's pretty amazing when you think of that.
That is amazing, and it shows our connections are beyond time and space of those that we care about and care about us. Now, I was raised fundamentalist Christian. And I guess it was around age 10 when I went through the born-again experience to give my life to Jesus, you know, when you're called up front to the church to have your sins washed. Okay.
Yep.
And then I went into a deep questioning phase. I used to ask my mom, why would our good Jewish doctor not go to heaven because he doesn't believe in Jesus being the only one and only Savior, you know? She never could answer that question. But in my religious and spiritual path, right, maybe a little different than yours.
Sure.
I explored most all the world's major religions, and I came to learn something very simple, is that all the world's major religions have a golden rule, and they're all phrased very similar to do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
Right.
The golden rule is, to me, crucial. And it transcends any particular religion. Now, from your tone, I get a little uncomfortable because I'm almost afraid you're going to try to convert me that Jesus and Christianity is the only true religion. That's
No,
you don't believe that. Okay.
Well, you know, I think it's when all of us want to do that.
It works for you, and I believe
you. Military personnel, yeah. Doctor. And I'm, you know, this is just me. The way I tell
and
them
I believe
is,
your experience was genuinely wondrously healing. And
right.
I believe that people and other faiths can have a similar healing through their faith. And that
sure.
And that it's like going up the mountain of the different religions or beliefs, maybe even atheism, you know?
Sure.
And at the top, you come to this great truth, the great truth of the oneness of life. And if we're all interconnected and we're all in this oneness, then what I do to you is what I am doing to me. And
that's
even
true.
For my own self-interest, if I don't want me to get hurt, either physically or in my soul of moral injury, if I do not want me to be hurt, I better make sure you're not getting hurt. You see what I mean? So we're back again to the golden rule and the several paths to this wonderful healing.
Well, you know, when I work with a lot of Marines and sailors mainly, other branches too, but and I work with them with post-traumatic stress from a patient's perspective, really, and then moral injury. What I basically tell them is I don't try to push my Christianity on them. I try to get them to understand that God is a merciful God. He's a loving God. He actually speaks to you sometimes. And what I try to tell them is that talking with an atheist one day, I asked the atheist about, you know, how he felt about God. He said he didn't believe in it. And I said, no. He said, no, I don't believe in that junk. And I said, you know, you can find out if God's real. And he said, how? And I said, look up to the ceiling and repeat after me. Say, God, if you're real, prove it to me. I want to know. Show me. And the man looked at me and said, I'm not going to say that. And I said, why not? He said, well, I'm just not. And I said, you're afraid he's going to reach down and slap the taste out of your mouth. And he said, I don't know. But he said, I can't say that. And I told him, I said, God is a wonderful God. And if you'll reach out to him, he will reach back. He said, if you seek me, you will find me. So I don't push Jesus Christ on him. What I teach, what I try to preach to him, same God you're talking about, same God I'm talking about. There is a God. If there is one up there, he will speak to you. If he doesn't speak to you, well, you're good to go. So I'm not
I wonder what that guy was afraid of, Ray. I wonder what he was afraid of that he wouldn't do as you suggested. What do you think he was afraid of?
He was afraid that there was really a God.
And then what would happen? Then what would happen to him?
But the truth of the matter is, God said, "I am very approachable. If you will approach me, I will approach you." And by looking up in faith and saying, "God, if you're real, I'm hurting, I'm dying, I'm miserable. If you can help me, help me." Please, and God will do it.
Yeah. Now,
does that sound
I'm a
neutral,
woman and you're a
sound...
guy. Yeah. Let me bring this part in. I'm a woman and you're a guy. Can you imagine being a woman and your whole life God is always he, and is always this God up there in the sky that's a guy? You know, it gets a little bit hard to relate. So that's why a lot of us women have had to find
my mom was
like
compassionate and merciful. My father was loving, but he was very strong. And when I am facing a war and a world, and I need compassion, I need mercy, God has everything because he created all those emotions. But God's a powerful, strong, he's a warrior. He'll fight for you. He has a mouth he speaks from, ears that hear, eyes that see, hands that feel you, arms that hug you, and feet run to you. So you just ask him, God, and whatever he reaches down and speaks to you, he will show himself. I do believe that.
And she, the goddess God, can also reach up in a flower, in a butterfly, and you say he will embrace us. And when we embrace each other, that is the God and the goddess dancing together. This is how I view it. And I view that the indigenous people saw nature. They didn't worship nature. They loved nature. You see the difference? They weren't nature worshipers. They loved the plants and the animals. And how can we go to war and destroy the environment, the plants and the animals, if we truly loved the earth, Mother Earth? It's always like indigenous is Father Sky, Mother Earth, and they are equal. And they together are the creation. And so this is another healing path for injured warriors. Is to love and be with nature, to go barefoot, to go to the mountains, to the ocean, to the garden, and really let nature heal us, because nature has that potential. You see what I mean? So if it's
I do,
nature,
and I,
God,
I agree with you too, because when you embrace God, God is those beautiful things you're talking about, and you can worship God in everything. It says nature itself worship God. But you talk about the indigenous people, like in the Amazon, for instance. I tell them sometimes, I said, if you go down to find a community down there, they call them a little tribe, or they call them other things, but a community of people, they are held together by a civil society, rules, if you want to. What are the rules they go by? Okay. Well, don't lie. That's one of them.
Uh-huh.
Don't steal. That's another one. Don't kill, especially unjustifiably. Don't commit adultery. Leave my wife alone. Don't be greedy for everything you see, and treat your parents right. Those things are contained in the Exodus 20.
How about that? And it all flows from the golden rule. All of those flow from do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Don't mess with my wife or my husband and everything you mentioned. I mean, it flows from there.
It's all there. It's the conscience of man is really the author is God himself, what he did to us. And so, you know, even in the book of Romans, chapter 2, verse 13 to 16, it says that the Gentiles who have not the law, they don't know God. They never heard of God. But it said they will be judged by a natural law. So everybody will be judged by what they do to each other, how they treat each other, don't steal, don't do all these things. And I don't think you can really keep those things unless you meet the author of the book instead of just reading the book. And that's what I'm talking about, having experience with God himself. He will
and
teach
when
you
say judging, you know, you'll be judged by. I mean, let's look at even what that means and who does the judging. Because sometimes it can be part of our punitive culture to say, I'm judging you and you're bad and you flunk and, you know, you're okay. You know, that has a heavy charged word, that judgment. And often most of us carry around such an inner judge where we condemn ourselves and we're our worst critic rather than a loving inner self towards ourselves. So let's think of judgment as simply an awareness that looks at the result of actions. And when our actions are not in line with the highest and best and with love and with the golden rule, then the Eastern religions talk about karma. We get something negative back in return sooner or later. So the very idea of feedback, let's just call it feedback. The universe gives us feedback. And there is a true path, and there's a way of being off that path. And being off it increases suffering, our own and others. And being on the mark of the truth of love increases joy and happiness and a sense of meaning and purpose. So it's just the way it works. It's not that, and the other thing that I think a distorted Christianity has given us is this, the idea that you're going to be judged and you're going to go to heaven or hell. And most of us probably think, well, looks like I'm headed to the place where there's fire. So that whole, you know, that didn't always exist, that idea of hell. Hell was actually a fire pit where they would burn garbage outside of Jerusalem centuries ago. And that became the name for hell. So can we take hell out of it, judging you and condemning you, Ray?
Does it take it out of it? I think one day, I think the New Testament talks about you will not be, the hearers of the word will not be justified before God. It's the doers of the word. And I believe we all have the opportunities to do what's right in this world, and the more that of us do it, the better world we have. It's just, I truly believe I'm going to stand before God one day and give an account of myself, and I want to do his will, and I want to love his commandments, and I want to serve him. And so I think, I've studied martial arts, and I've studied Japanese and things for 25 years, and I know in the Japanese culture and in the religion, all these about the Japanese, but it's basically the same, whatever religion. There are good, decent people that are trying to, mm-hmm. to live a good life and trying to treat people right. And I think they're living by their conscience if they don't know God or know Jesus Christ or whatever. But I believe they will be judged by a natural conscience. God is a just judge of all things.
He created law in the world, and so we
do bad things. We have to be judged.
Yeah.
Right? And so
yeah.
the Bible says, if you judge yourself, you won't have to be judged.
As a transpersonal, meaning psychospiritual psychotherapist, and who's looked at near-death experiences, you know, I'm sure you both have come across this information, that worldwide, part of that near-death when people have been declared dead and then come back, is they many times have an experience of their whole life, a flash of their entire life, every single incident of their life coming before their mind.
Sure.
It must be an amazing movie to see, you know? And that some of us believe, is correlated to this judgment, where you get to actually do a life review, and you get to see, and you will feel, because you'll be in a state where you can have a feeling about what you did that was good and what you did that was off the mark, that was harmful, and that's the review. So in a way, we may all be going through that experience sooner or later.
We may, but I think what the difference would be, Doctor, was the fact is that at some point you say, God, forgive me. That's all it takes, faith and repentance, and it can all be washed away. It can all be taken away from us. So it's not a big deal to do it. It's not like you have to be churchy or join a church or a religion or nothing like that.
Yeah,
it's a personal thing between you and God of saying, God, please forgive me. And God begins to start you over again.
It sounds like you get to that point where you had to feel a true remorse. You had to feel truly sorry. And was your capacity to just have that feeling that would even allow your humility to request God's forgiveness?
That's right. That's right. But you have to acknowledge, first of all, you have to believe that there is somebody there, and you have to look up, because if there is a God, he's above us. He's looking down on us. And you have to say, Lord, forgive me. I don't know who you are, and I don't know how you're going to do it. But God, if you're there, I need help. I'm dying.
Yeah.
And I've been there.
Yeah.
And you say, God, if you can help me, I need help right now. Please help me. I will guarantee you he will show up. I can almost say that, because I've seen it too many.
Mm-hmm. You also talked about doing some good things each day, you know. I believe you said that just a few moments back. And I think it's an important part of the healing process, that every day we wake up and say, may I find some opportunity to be of service to the world today. And I know from my life and many others, you get to the point where you just, your cry of your soul is, please, I just want to be useful. I just want to be of some value, some small value to the world. I just want to serve. And that's a truly transcending of this kind of separative ego consciousness. It shows we're arriving in this unity. Life is oneness. Life is connected consciousness, where our heart's desire is to be a service.
Right.
And that's where you guys are.
Regardless of the trauma, I mean, trauma is trauma. Doug was in a different setting than I was in Vietnam. We were both in trauma. We were both involved in things, killing people, more or less. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, I can't fluff that up anyway. So we're all in trauma, but that is no different trauma than somebody in a major situation of sexual trauma, whatever it was, or physical trauma, verbal trauma, wherever you thought your life was ending. That was trauma. And so all of us come out of situations like that, regret, guilt, shame, all these things that are associated with that trauma. And so we come up with this moral injury, but there is a resolve. If I can't make anybody do it, I do the same things that you've been talking about. Write a poem, write a story. When I wrote my book, the VA had me to write a story of the worst thing that happened in Vietnam, and my platoon was wiped out. Out of 48 Marines and corpsmen, we took 42 casualties that day, dead and wounded. And so I lost my entire family that day, and we were fighting all day through that situation. Well, I wrote about it, but they had me to write it four different times, and each time I wrote it with more depth, more feeling, more honesty. And by the time I wrote it, I felt much better. And so writing is a very good outlet for someone who's been traumatized and someone who is dealing with moral injury. And it's not enough to just write the story. You got to reach way down inside of you and become very honest. And when you do that, you're going to feel better. And everybody, there's people around you that are dealing with the same things, and more not exactly the same thing, but with the hiding and the shame. And when you reach it and bring it out of you, it helps people around you.
Right.
It's very beneficial.
We got one part here. A physical injury can be cured, and we have medicine that's had incredible advances in our lifetime. But without the spirit and the soul being healed deep inside, the physical medicine, the physical treatment, the successful treatment for all these things are going to be very limited, because this whole wheel and this whole interconnection, especially as the Native Americans and all them put out, it's all tied with one, and the spirit of the soul is the center of everything. So how do we get to this? Because if we're sitting here in limbo land and we don't understand it, we don't want to receive it, or we're sitting there going, well, I got to belong, so I'm going to go along, and yet your brain is in incredible trauma, so the subconscious, who has and understands this or realizes they can get there, is battling the conscious totally on a day-in and day-out basis. Because the veteran, Vietnam veteran, everything, we've all heard, it was good, we did it right, and all this stuff. Wait a minute, we lost. And we weren't responsible for what the heck happened. We got lied to, we got set up.
Like that.
And now we got physiological injuries that got to get cured. We've been abandoned. I mean, you know, that's where all these guys committed suicide. They've been abandoned beyond comprehension. They see no hope. I mean, last week on the radio show, he had a Marine captain. As he said, he had the gun in his mouth when God came to him, and he said, we're building furniture. So Jesus was a carpenter, and now we've got a Marine captain's a carpenter. He's saving lives.
Yeah. That's such a beautiful story. Okay, stop. Find another choice. It's life-affirming, and in his case, it was making beautiful carpentry items with his hands, right? That's a beautiful story. But you asked Doug about, all the medicines for physical injuries, but now at the soul and the emotional injuries, with the pain that begins to emerge as actually coming out of the trauma, because when we're totally in it, we're locked up. But when we begin to feel some of the pain and we want to battle, we don't want to feel the pain, we're afraid it's going to overwhelm us, we want to be tough, we don't want to admit it. But to allow ourselves to feel the pain is bringing attention to the pain so that it can heal. Just like if we have a physical wound, we would look at that wound and we would pay attention to so we could do what we could needed to do to heal that wound. It's the same with the soul and the emotional wounding. It's to honor the pain and to pay attention to it. Give it its time. Give it its voice. Ray, you talked about writing more deeply, or maybe playing music or doing the carpentry, but it's to let the pain be there, neither pushing it away nor being overly indulging in it so that you go crazy. You don't want to go crazy with pain. You just want to breathe into it. You know, just like in childbirth, you teach people Lamaze, women are reading, you breathe into the pain giving birth. Well, this is a giving of a birth to yourself, of your full psyche again. So you literally breathe into the pain, feel it, write about it, express it, then breathe, literally, breathing in, letting more of it out, letting more of it there. And to feel, this is a very important kind of phrase to get in there, to feel is to heal. To feel is to heal. And the very word heal comes from the same root word as healing, wholeness. To heal is to find our wholeness. And the same root word as holy. Holy. So healing, wholeness, and holy. They are all the same root perception. and process, actually, of coming into that oneness of self with the world and with others.
As you
One of the things I also have to practice, and this is what I've talked to these Marines about, is
do you see any understanding or comprehension of the soul and the spirit as a part of the warrior and the transition from warrior to peacemaker back and forth or whatever it is as leader?
I think a lot of the veterans for peace groups are guys and gals who made that transition. They still have the, you know, the courage and the stand up and stand on truth with it. They found that they're standing on truth force, what Gandhi called Satyagraha. And that's a real force. And that's a really courageous warrior force. And that is a combination of gender, male and female. It is the more what we think of the male warrior, but there's also a female warrior archetype. And the healer, that to stand on that place of healing and truth, has a real warrior energy about it. And is that needed at this time? I'm going to be down at the Pentagon on Monday with the World Without War folks. And I'm not going to choose to get arrested this time. I have previously, but in this one, I'm just going to be a support person. But I am against all war. I want to abolish war. As I said earlier, it's peace. It's using the force of law. We need force, and we need to, you know, take care of the bad guys that people aren't into their soul yet. They're doing bad stuff. They need to be kept from doing harm. So there's a lot of warriors that will go and stand there at the Pentagon and probably be arrested on Monday. I just wanted to put that piece in our puzzle here.
You know, Ray and I are warriors, and the other warriors we've been around, and you and I, a lot of in our time, I mean, you and I went to Gettysburg together, which was, yeah, what else can we say, right? The warrior is sitting out there at the very top end. And if there isn't, in all of us and myself, if I have a viable threat against our nation or anything, I got no hesitation at all to go and ask if I get back on a B-52 and drop a nuke. At the same time, I'm going to do everything I can to heal the environment and heal the soldier and heal the so-called enemy or the non-combatant, sure they're taken care of. That, how does that come to play between? Because, I mean, you and I have talked, Ray, you and I have talked. We're sitting in a limbo land because as a warrior, you truly are capable, and you know what you're capable of, frightening things. But at the same time, when you come to the realization of what peace and hope and justice and God's about, it gives you a whole entirely different perspective.
Doug, let me say something.
I still don't understand how that comes into play, and I'm trying to figure it out for myself.
What my personal self is, I found out personally, I can do more damage to things around me on my knees than I can on my feet. God is a God of peace and mercy, and you know, I wish we did have world peace and those things, but I do much more fighting on my knees, praying to God, than I do out there carrying a rifle around trying to do it all myself.
You mean like wrestling with God, like wrestling with your soul? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what we're doing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you pray and you ask God to be with our president, be with world leaders, be with these people, and, and calm people down. Right now, we have so much racial tension in America that the war is among us, and it's like if we could just get a hold of ourselves and calm down, maybe we could rationalize some things and we could work on it.
And working on it is like wrestling to find some first principles or primary truths. And we've been, I think, identifying some of them in this hour. But first principles of truth and how to have a world that works for everyone. And now you mentioned the racial tension. Years ago, I had a friend that went around the world having world leaders sign this statement. The statement was, "We are all human beings." And I said, "Well, what a crazy thing to do." And the older I got, the more I realized what a profound thing he did. So if we recognize we're all human beings, we all bleed when we're caught, we all cry when we're sad, we all are happy and joyous and want our families to do well, you know, we're all human beings. We have the same basic need. And then once we recognize that human beingness is true, then we say, well, what's the first step out in terms of a rule to build a fair world that works for everybody? I mean, it's like, so that we know, no matter where we're born on the earth, we have a high likelihood of a good life. And through another one of my searches to understand the root causes of wealth inequality and rich-poor gap, and that certainly plays into current racial tensions, you know, being divided, people divided against each other when there's so much wealth flows to the top few hundred families that are multi-billionaires now. What I came across was a perennial wisdom teaching around economic justice. And it's in Judeo-Christianity, but it's also in the Vedics, the Hindu Vedics going back 10,000 years, is that we understand that the earth is not made by people. It's some kind of creator, a god, if you will. God made the creation, the first mover. And the first rule out would be to fairly share this creation. That means to fairly share the land and resources as a birthright, the equal birthright of each and every one of us. Then it comes to a choice. If we say, yes, it makes sense that we have a birthright equal as human beings to the earth, then are we going to tend this garden and make this earth a beautiful garden, or are we going to continue to fight over turf?
Well, if we could get everybody to do those few laws, six different laws we talked about earlier, don't lie, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't kill, don't be greedy and treat your parents with honor, we'd have a good world here. If everybody would quit doing and breaking those things and try to do the best they could to keep those things, that would be a perfect world, really. But I don't know. We'll keep trying.
You mentioned earlier wrestling with our soul and our spirit. I think that's really what we're doing. I think what moral injury really is. I think you might have stumbled on something because the warrior has seen the worst. The warrior can physiologically heal. But he's wrestling with his soul. He's wrestling with his spirit for true final healing. And the Vietnam vet and the other ones, too many of them haven't come home yet because that wrestling match is, it's non-ending. And I guess we have to figure out how do we end.
You know, they talk about suicide prevalent, Doug, but a lot of people aren't suicidal or they don't try to suicide, but they do continue on risky behavior. They take a lot of chances of taking their lives without doing suicide. And that comes from post-traumatic stress and moral injury.
I believe we very much need some or more, any healing, actual physical, in nature, healing communities for vets and their families to heal. I live near the Scotland School for Veterans Children. It was founded for children of people who died in the Civil War. And they're closing it down, and that was what to do. Well, we had remember when General Mullen was chief of the military? Of all the forces, General Mullen, Mike Mullen, M-U-L-L-E-N. So he came here and spoke because there was a plan afoot to have, this is a beautiful campus, it's like a whole village, 150 acres and all the buildings, everything was all there, to have it be a healing center for veterans, returning veterans to be with their families for just this purpose. And, you know, for the lack of like $5 million, I think it was, or less, we couldn't get that to happen. It's still greatly needed. It's still great with you because you come home and you have all this trauma and the family splits apart. Where are you going to go? And then you can't find a job and you can't find employment. And then you're homeless and in the street and you're drug and alcohol addicted and so on. What an opening to have a welcoming here. Come.
Well, we're here, running out of time again. Healed. Another incredible conversation. Alana, thank you. Ray, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you,
Doug.
Take care, guys. Have a good evening.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.